Tua.
Fires. Touchdown, Miami. Waddle snuck into the end zone of Miami.
Boy, tight throw, tight window. They had to get that touchdown on that play to get it.
What is up, Dolphins, and welcome to the Drive Time Podcast, part of the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network, covering your team, your Miami Dolphins. How's it going, everybody? It's a Victory Tuesday. I am your host, Travis Wingfield, and as always, I am here to bring you your daily dose of Miami Dolphins football. And on today's show, I think you know what time it is. That's a seventh straight win.
Win. Yeah. Curve everything goes.
We only play that song on Victory Mondays, or in this case, a Victory Tuesday. Earlier this year, a Victory Friday. But you get the idea. The Dolphins take down the Saints 20-3, and we have heard that song seven straight weeks with a dominant defensive performance as the Dolphins move into the seventh position in the AFC with 2 weeks left to play in the regular season. We'll get to the takeaways, the individual performances. We'll play a segment from the postgame show with myself and the guys from the Fish Tank, Seth and OJ. We'll have some postgame audio from Coach Flores and Tua Tagovailoa as well from somewhere in South Florida in the early morning hours. This is the Drive Time Podcast.
That's another Miami Dolphins.
I want to go ahead and open up this podcast, starting off with Brian Flores' message when he was asked postgame about how this team was able to stick together and put themselves in the position they find themselves here on this early Tuesday morning.
I think this team stuck together really the entire year. Obviously we dealt with a lot of adversity early in the year. Revealed a lot revealed a lot. I would say revealed the character of the guys in our locker room. Revealed that some people are with you and some people are on the fence. I think our guys just kept fighting. They kept sticking together. I think that's, they support each other. They work hard. They give great effort. And when you do those things, you put yourself in position to get the results you're looking for.
I wanted to start the podcast with that audio because I think it's instructive and also something you really want to hear if you're a fan of the Miami Dolphins, because that is by no accident of the construction of this football team and the things that have been prioritized by the Miami Dolphins for 3 years and that have consistently been preached by that guy you just heard, the head coach of these Miami Dolphins that has Miami with their 8th win of the season after a 10-win season last year, 8 wins through 16 weeks this season, has them in position that they're in right now to go out to Tennessee and play a meaningful football game on Sunday, and the most important game on the schedule coming up is the next game with those Titans. But back to the point there, to be able to weather the storm of a 1-7 start, to be able to put together a 7-game win streak within that same time frame or same season, I should say, which is the first team to ever do that in the history of the National Football League. Like Coach Flores says, it does say a lot about this team. And what else this team told us again on Monday night is our first takeaway of the postgame podcast here. The defense does the damn thing once again. The Saints go 0-12 on third downs in this game, and they net 5 yards total on those third downs. Now, they were in the negative before Alvin Kamara rips off a 19-yard run on 3rd and 20, but those still count just the same, so they do wind up with the 5 yards on those third down plays. 164 total yards for the Saints offense. The Dolphins registered 8 sacks. That was the first time they had done that since 2012. They have now back-to-back games in which they have recorded 5-plus sacks in 5 straight games with at least 3 sacks recorded. And over the previous 7 games, Miami has 43 sacks over that winning streak. So over 6 sacks per game during this winning streak for the Miami Dolphins defense. Within this game, Emmanuel Ogbah picks up 2 sacks. Jerome Baker, 1.5. Brandon Jones puts himself atop the list of all defensive backs in terms of sacks in this league with his 5th of the season. Xavien Howard gets his first sack of the season. Zach Sealer has a sack. Christian Wilkins and Raekwon Davis both record a half sack each. And we'll have the updated season numbers for both the individuals and the team on the podcast tomorrow, taking a deeper dive into this victory for the Miami Dolphins. But for now, I do want to go to head coach Brian Flores, who was asked postgame about this defensive performance and the approach against Ian Book.
Credit to Josh and the defensive staff, but we have a nice game plan, mixing coverages, mixing the fronts. Did a good job stopping a run, which was a big emphasis. Thought the guys just played. They played hard. They played fast. They gave great effort. We knew it was going to be a 60-minute game. We knew it wasn't going to be easy. It was a physical Saints team. Sean had them ready. Had some made some adjustments in the game that, then we had to make some adjustments. So I thought they had a good plan. We just made a few more plays than they did.
And you heard him say he liked the way Josh, which is Dolphins defensive coordinator Josh Boyer, the way he was mixing the coverage with the rush. And I really thought that was the case all night as well, because multiple times I noted Miami doing something a little bit different than the previous time on third down to get stops and changing the picture post-snap against the rookie quarterback. Like early in the game, Byron Jones comes off the edge for a cat blitz, a cornerback blitz, and he applies pressure on Book, who has to flee the pocket and winds up in trouble doing that. Later in the game, they get eight-man coverage look with the umbrella of linebackers like Andrew Van Ginkle and Jerome Baker, for instance, and Xavien Howard, who also was part of that underneath shell with the safety help over the top, and the Dolphins playing that eight-man coverage. They had eyes on the quarterback, and Book, after surveying the field and seeing nothing there against that eight-man coverage, decides to flee. But because of that point, with all the eyes and the quarterback, they're able to just string him all the way out of bounds. And I think that was the play where Xavien Howard got the sack. And then later you have Alvin Kamara. He flexes out into a position where we kind of talked about this with me, Seth, and OJ right before this play happened, about how, notice how Alvin Kamara has just the one reception tonight. That's a great job by this Dolphins defense to keep him kind of off the books in that regard. And as we're saying this, I said, notice how we know what Jalen Waddle can do for an offense and against a defense, and how they have not yet been able to neutralize his production. We were very excited about that thought, and then out comes Alvin Kamara into a position where you can really kind of create a matchup for a guy where he's into it's a nasty split, which means you're in close to the formation, in close to the two tackles on either side, and they also put him on a stack, which means he's behind another player aligned in that position, which typically creates a free release because you can't go press a guy through another guy. So Kamara gets aligned into this position, and Jones has outside technique as the wide corner. I'm thinking, is he going to take the top man off the stack? What's going to happen here? Because Van Ginkle's also over there, but neither of them has capped Alvin Kamara or anyone, either of the two receivers on that stack. And I was wondering how that was going to look, so I kept an eye on it. And they turned the point man on the stack free into the second level, and the safety closed down on that and had to get closed from depth right there. But they bracketed Alvin Kamara in a way that kind of kept him inside, because when he has that free release and from that position close to the quarterback, he kind of has a two-way go where he can either hit that kind of juke move speed out and kind of leave the cornerback leaning inside, or cross face over the middle for the Texas route, the little angle route where you go outside back inside. And that's a tough matchup to handle. But you throw that bracket on him, and that creates a third and short, or that wasn't a third and short, rather, and it forces the Saints to punt right there. So I love the way they were able to mix the coverage with the rush there and change the picture for the rookie quarterback. And in the first half of this game, I do not have the next-gen stats for the second half. Miami blitz book 70% of his dropbacks, which was the most in one half for any team this season. So they wanted pressure, they got pressure, and it was effective all night long to the tune of 8 sacks. I wanted to make a quick note of Nick Needham and Van Ginkle on the pick six that really set the tone for the course of this game. The Saints get that stop. The Dolphins defense comes out on the third play of the game, gets an interception that goes back for a touchdown. And from there, it just kind of changes the dynamic of the game in terms of how it was played. And I thought it let Miami get into their offensive plan sooner. It let the Dolphins defense settle into that game. And Juice made this point that when a rookie makes a play like that early in a game, he might now kind of have in the back of his mind, well, I can't let that happen again. So there's a possibility of second guessing. I won't say that he was, but it's something to think about. And that's why setting the tone early is certainly an important element. And that's what the Dolphins did in this game. On that play, Nick Needham, I thought he was driving on the play before the ball even came out. So he was going to be in good shape regardless of the tip or not. And I thought Van Ginkle to recognize on a 3rd and 2 when Book's back foot hits the top of his drop and you see the hands start to separate off the football, he's got his eyes on the quarterback. We've talked about this for years, how important it is at the rush positions to keep your eyes on the quarterback and have gaps gap integrity within this defense. I thought Van Ginkle showed that with eyes on the quarterback, and then to create distance between he and the man in front of him, to that helps you then get your hands up and get yourself clean so you can elevate and try to swat the football down. And he gets a piece of the ball, and it goes into that pick for Nick Needham in a huge play to get them going. 7-0 off the top right there. Just fantastic work by the defense. And before we get to our next takeaway here, I talked about blitzing Ian Book and getting effective pressure that way. 6 of the Dolphins' 8 sacks came with 4 or fewer rushers in this game per Next Gen. And in fact, Miami's 11% sack rate without blitzing is the best in the NFL since week 9, since the winning streak began. That's insane. I mean, think about the guys with a ton of pressure production on the season. Like, it's a variety of things, but they can all really flash rush ability with, you know, a consistent winning type of move that they have shown to be effective time and time again. Like Zach Sealer, his snatch and pull from that defensive end position, it's getting guys every single week. Emmanuel Ogba, the cross chop to get off that edge and then corner around the outside, it's getting home every single week. We've seen Jalen Phillips convert speed to power frequently. We've seen Jerome Baker get those skinny angles up the A-gap and really put immediate pressure when he times up those blitzes right on the opposing quarterback. We've seen games work where there's different pick stunts. We saw Brandon Jones set a pick stunt tonight. We've seen Christian Wilkins do that all season long, in addition to his own ability all of a sudden, where he's now becoming he was always a really good run defender, and the pass rush production has slowly just come along as well, but it's kicking up to another gear even this year. And then you have Adam Butler, the quick get off, and the way he can get by the imposing interior defensive offensive line, I should say. Andrew Van Ginkle, I mean, that little shoulder dip and run around the corner, he's found the way to get pressure on the opposing quarterback. So those are all guys that had pass rush production in this game, and you factor that with the ability to blitz the quarterback. That's how you wind up playing 3 games over a 7-game stretch with 0 touchdowns allowed, and the total touchdowns in those 7 games, 6. That's pretty good. Takeaway number 2. The offensive game plan should come as no surprise in this game. In fact, Tua Tagovailoa, let's go ahead and let him kick off this segment, or this takeaway, I should say, that the offensive game plan should have been no surprise to Dolphins fans out there.
Well, we always stress playing complementary football. So the defense giving the offense the ball back and the offense capitalizing on those turnovers. And then also in the kicking game, you know, whether it's a punt, being able to back their team up and putting our defense in a good situation, and vice versa with our kick return and our punt return game. So it's definitely something that gives us life, whether it's the offense scoring on the first drive or scoring in general, or the defense getting a big third down stop or getting a turnover and scoring. It's definitely something that gives, I would say, this team life.
Very clearly stated there by Tua Tagovailoa that when you generate a game plan for the Miami Dolphins, it's going to be about winning the football game. It's not going to be 3 singular elements, offense, defense, and special teams. It's a general plan about winning the football game. And that might be how it is in every single organization, but we know for sure that it is here with the Miami Dolphins. And the complementary game plan, I mean, we told you about the Saints' numbers on offense, and it's kind of one of those situations where if you don't really lose the game offensively with that type of defensive performance, then you won't lose the game, if that makes sense. And so I actually would probably give some love here to my co-host on the post-game show on 560 WQAM, to Seth Levitt, and the analytics debate that he and I seemingly have every single week, whether it's on the podcast or on the post-game show or on the Lunch Bunch on Friday afternoons and Instagram Live, whatever the case may be. We always go back and forth on that, and it kind of hurt my soul throughout the course of this game. You guys know I love the aggressive mindset of being aggressive on fourth down. The Dolphins have been that this season many a times in going for fourth downs. And even as I watch this game unfold, and typically always fourth and short, go, 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 my mantra there during the games, watching the games. But in this game, you know, kick it away, let the defense do their thing, because they were so red hot and you kind of feel the flow of the game. So in this particular instance, if maybe the numbers tell me I should go here, I think the game plan to play that complementary style where you really just trust a defense is playing so well is a very smart play. And it might not be the sexy play or the attractive play, but you always have to appreciate the right play when you make it, especially when it's not the sexy play. And I think that's what Miami came up with here and put together a football game where they just were in control from the outset because of that style and because of that approach. I mean, we saw a third and 12 running play. That's a field position play all the way, kind of some quick game on the short yardage as well. Now, I did like the shot play to Jalen Waddle in that situation towards the end of the half there where you have a second and kind of medium-ish long and you've got only 30 seconds or so, one timeout I think it was at that moment, and you're right around the 30 or so yard line. The ball was just a bit wide in that very tight spot and the kind of two look that the Saints defense was in and that pylon shot. You know, there's no real need to throw the ball there also in those last couple of drives. So to run the ball 30 times for 86 yards compared to just 28 dropbacks, to have a heavier run to pass balance, I think that's exactly how you want to play this game coming in. And for Miami to be able to get to that and execute it and achieve it, I think there's a tip of the hat to be made in that situation. And just real quick to finish up this takeaway, I thought the combination of Duke and Lindsey was nice to see. Both of those guys got 13 carries. I liked what Philip Lindsey showed in the Wildcat. There's the overall decisiveness they've shown behind the line and their limited work this year. I've really enjoyed seeing that. Let's get to takeaway number three, but real quick first, these words. So takeaway number three is going right back to the rookie class, and it's one singular word. It's just Waddle. I think that Jalen Waddle's production this year and what he means to the offense, we've kind of seen it down the stretch here. It's been so impressive. And just really quick on him in this game, ESPN showed the graphic late on the telecast that he tied Jerry Rice for the most catches by a rookie on a Monday Night Football game with his 10 receptions tonight, just under 100 yards for him. Another touchdown. He goes in for his fifth receiving touchdown, his sixth total touchdown as a pro. He became the Miami Dolphins all-time rookie receiving yardage record holder tonight in that game, or last night, I should say. And he's now within striking distance, just five more to go from Anquan Boldin for tying the record for all-time receptions by a rookie in a season. And if they try to say, hey, he did it in 17 games, no, he didn't. He missed a game. So if he plays the next two games and he gets the record, that'll happen in 16 games for him. So good on Jalen Waddle. And just to further the point beyond the stats and the box score here and what your eyes tell you, he just doesn't disappear from the game. I mean, OJ McDuffie and I were talking about this during the broadcast, and man, what a fun time we had watching that game tonight with him, Seth, and Jason Sarney of Fins Maniacs came over for the game and hung out with us in the Verizon, I think it was Talent Lounge at the 560 studio there. It was awesome to have that little moment and hang out with him. And I hope you guys saw the promotion for the post game show. Sarney got involved on that. But I was talking to OJ about how Waddle just doesn't seem to have these games where it's like two catches for 21 yards. Like, he's always part of the game plan, always finding a way to factor into the equation. And Ju said that he thinks the reason that he's able to do that is because they do a great job of finding ways to make sure they move him around so he can't get taken away by an opposing defensive game plan. So that's highly valuable when your top guy is not, I wouldn't say impervious to being shut down, but so far in his rookie season, he's shown you that he does not go away in games ever, really. He also catches everything. He's tough as hell and can maintain possession through contact, whether it's the ground, whether it's a hit, you know, whatever the case may be, he finds a way to hang on to that football, opens up so much creativity for the offense. And I, again, really don't think we've seen what he's truly capable of in the vertical game. So getting him, and not just getting him, but acquiring an additional first-round draft pick to go along with Jalen Waddle, you just can't do it any better than that. Takeaway number four, thought the offense had a rough night, and it started up front against a very strong Saints front with Cameron Jordan, with Marcus Davenport, with David Onyemata, with Marshawn Lattimore in that defensive backfield. I just wanted to make a quick note about some of the mistakes that got on my radar in that first half that I thought killed some drives that otherwise had some promise to them. And it was either penalties or sacks early on. So on the field goal drive, the Dolphins' first field goal scoring drive of the game, there's a sack on third and four. That one just, it happened so quickly that it was, you hope they can convert on that short yardage throw. The third and two call, there's a holding call that negated a first down on that play. It was a Eichenberg holding call, and they converted for big yards on a third and two on a pass over the middle to Jalen Waddle. It was the first drive of the second quarter, and that was the one where Eichenberg barely made contact with anybody and was flagged for holding, and that one comes back, but still a mistake that really winds up killing a drive there. And then second and one, there's a holding call on the missed field goal drive, the 59-yarder, and this holding call gets called on Austin Jackson to back him up. They would convert that, but later, same drive after getting to a first and short, or a first and five, rather, after a neutral zone infraction, Michael Dieter gets hit with a holding call. They get themselves back into position, but on that same series, on a third and two, a negative 9-yard sack, which sets up a 59-yard field goal. But, you know, you understand the thought here to this game. Again, like we talked about this, it's if you don't make the big mistake, you don't turn it over. With the defense playing the way they did, it's going to be difficult to lose that game if you can stay true to that plan. But again, those long drives do create more opportunities for penalties, for sacks, for mistakes. I mean, and we saw that. That's how that plan kind of goes. You live and die by your plan. We saw that kind of rear its head at certain points in this game. You have the one turnover. You have the missed field goal in that game that cost you some points, obviously. By the way, the Jalen Waddle's hustle play to get that football back after the sack in the first on the Dolphins' first field goal drive. Great, great effort by that young man to get himself into the equation and not give the Saints an easy scoop up. I think it was either him or Eichenberg that fell on the football, but it was Waddle's effort that kept the play alive to get a 48-yard Jason Sanders field goal. But back to the idea, this was a rough night for the offense, I thought, in general. Tua, you know, he missed that crosser earlier in the game against pressure. And this is a play that we've talked about on the All-22 where sometimes there's pressure up the interior and one of those crossers comes right in behind that and they're open and the ball does not always get there. I think that was something we saw in this game. He kind of threw it wide and high of Myles Gaskin at that throw. And then also later a third and short throw that came before another Sanders field goal attempt that was high to Myles Gaskin on an in-breaking route. So got to hit those. Hopefully we get those ironed out for next week and are better in those. I thought the shot play to Waddle was a good idea and really close to good location, but just a bit wide on that. And then the bad pick, and let's go ahead and let Tua break down that interception he threw and what he was going through in his process on that play.
Yeah, just stepped up, and I thought I could give Mac a good back shoulder. Didn't expect him to break it across like it happened, but, you know, took a chance there. Obviously, we could have just hit the easier throw, the easier pass to Jalen on the in cut on that play, but it was what it was. You know, I think our defense did outstanding, giving us opportunities that, you know, we obviously need to capitalize on. But that was that.
So there you hear Tua talking about the interception. Obviously, the big thing you take away from that is he talks about noticing Waddle coming across the middle of the field open on that play. And just kind of going through what we're going to be critical when it's called for and praised when it's called for as well. But, you know, Tua just kind of being transparent about his performance on a night that we call not up to what I think we would all and himself would agree is his standard, still goes 19 for 26 for a buck 98 and a touchdown pass and a 91.5 passer rating. I mean, he winds up with a healthy yards per attempt, just under 8 yards per attempt for almost 75% completion. He hit 73% against a defense or in a 90.5 passer rate, 95.1 passer rating against a defense who last week held Tom Brady and that offense of passing game to a 57.1 passer rating, just 4.5 yards per attempt and 54% completion. So, I mean, perspective here, right? It's all, you can acknowledge the plays that didn't go your way while also appreciating the greater body of work. And in this game, Tua in the offense did enough to win the game within that game plan, but kind of back to the takeaway, just not super efficient, 5 for 15 on third downs, 3 sacks, 259 yards in the game. I think obviously you hope and expect to be more efficient and just more sharp in the coming games. It wasn't there in the running game either. Just 3 yards per carry for Duke Johnson, less than that for Phillip Lindsay. Just to kind of further flesh out this idea, I thought there was a left first down on the field on the Myles Gaskin 2nd-and-9 conversion that Miami wound up not getting on the Brissett rollout that I thought could have been, that was kind of left in the field there in terms of him getting past the sticks there. So all that in mind, again, remember that defense shut out the Bucks and Tom Brady a week ago. The fifth takeaway coming up after these words. And the fifth takeaway here on the Drive Time Victory Tuesday recap edition is, speaking of Tua, how about the response after another bad pick? You love to see that. I mean, coming back from adversity is really what this game is all about in that position for sure. And last week on the game-winning drive, it was the touchdown throw and the second throw to Mike Gesicki, but again, the 3rd-and-11 touchdown throw to put the team up 7 points late in the fourth quarter there was huge. And this time, it's a 40-yard bomb, absolute dime, to get them off their own goal line. And just the situation there, the flow of that game, like EPA is a big stat, right? That EPA expected points added and the win probability added stats out there, that had to have jumped pretty significantly on that play, because you go from punting from your own 15-yard line if that completion's not hit, and the Saints probably get the ball, I mean, think about a 45-yard gross in terms of the kick. That puts them, you know, in the plus 35, 30-yard range to get the football in that spot down by 7, opposed to having the Dolphins with the football in plus territory on the Saints side of the field, which would wind up going in to score a touchdown to go up by 14 points. That's a huge, huge swing in that game. And on after the interception was thrown, Tua went 6 for 9, 82 yards, and a touchdown after that pick. So again, he bounces back in a big way with that 9-play, 86-yard, 4 minutes and 30-second touchdown drive following the interception. And Mac Hollins, let's talk about Mac Hollins on that reception. I mean, the inside release and the way he's able to stack that defensive back. I mean, he showed the outside release, cross face, and then got on top of him really quickly. And that gave Tua a clear window immediately, which is where I think he really excels in the vertical game, when he can see it early and rip it early and anticipate that downfield shot. That's what you saw a lot at Bama, was those deep handoffs. What I mean by that is the ball's right on the money. Mac stacks early. Tua lets it rip early. What it does is it gets the ball out before the pass protection or the pass rush even factors into the equation. And it also gives you those one-on-one opportunities where if you can win early and go get the football, it can create some big plays down the field. It did in this game, the early anticipation vertical shot to Mac. Great job getting that separation. And also great job pinning that punt down at the 1-yard line late in that game. That was a fantastic play to stay right there outside of the white stripe. What a game this was. Dolphins win their 7th straight, and again are in the 7th position in the AFC standings at this moment. 2 more games to play next Sunday in Nashville against the Titans. Should be a fun one. But that's going to do it for my time on this podcast. Tomorrow we have the All-22 Review podcast coming up. Quick turnaround Thursday for the preview of Dolphins and Titans, Kenjemi and the Mailbag on Friday, and the post-game show podcast should be live on the Odyssey app on 560, the best of 560 WQAM. And speaking of the post-game show, stay tuned after the outro here. Seth, OJ, and myself are going to show you, or talk to you rather, about this Dolphins' dominant defensive performance and the 7th straight victory. In the meantime, that's going to be my time. You all please be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating. Leave us a review. You can find me on Twitter at Wingfield NFL. Follow the team on all socials at Miami Dolphins. Check out the Fish Tank with Seth and OJ. They have Marco Coleman coming in the podcast this week, into the tank this week. Check out our YouTube channel for all the media availabilities, as well as Dolphins Today with myself, Joanna Torres, and Rachel Smith. And last but not least, MiamiDolphins.com. Until next time, fins up, Caroline. Daddy's coming home. In season or off season, you and your car make a great team. Take care of it with Chevron with Techron. For unbeatable cleaning and mileage, it's a winning play. Chevron, together ahead. And guys, we talked about the offense there a little bit, but I do want to go back to the defense, because I think that was the story of the game. I'm pretty clear. I don't think that really requires a whole lot of explanation. But again, the 0 for 12 on third down, that's 3 straight games for Miami with 5 sacks, 5 straight games with 3 sacks, if you can put that together in your head, 43 sacks over the last 7 games. And I think the part that really impressed me most, Juice, was the way they finished out this game. There was a series in the middle of the fourth quarter where Sealer finishes up with a huge sack for an 11-yard loss. Ogbah then finishes him up with a huge hit, and then Eric Rowe comes in for a hit. You had Baker and Javon Holland combining for that sack and a big pop on the quarterback. They were finishing these guys off and kind of sending a message to the rest of the league that this defense, they're gonna bring the physicality too.
Yeah, man, they shut down any potential threat, like, from the beginning. You know, every single time they had an opportunity, it looked like to even get something going. I mean, you put the one stat out there, over 12 on third down. That's getting it done. You know, I think one for one on maybe four, no, one for three or something on fourth down as well.
Yeah, so it one for 15 on third and fourth downs.
Yeah, unbelievable. I'll take it. Yeah, how they did on defense. There was really no true threat out there. And they tried to put a little drive together at the end. The defense played their butts off, man. And that's where, you know, we talked about it over and over and over again. It's where our bread is buttered. They got some guys over there that get paid some big bucks to make big plays, and that's what they do. Just a mix of young, a mix of old, bringing in a bunch of different guys to make plays for his team, man. It was fun. You know, when you sit up there and you watch and see a team get eight sacks and it's spread out through around the whole defense, you know, everybody seemed like they got a little piece of, a book today, and it was important.
Yeah, well, if you were listening to the – hopefully you were listening because that was a rough – you know, that Monday night crew was definitely not – Dolphin favored, that's for sure. But if you were listening to the game being called on WQAM, JT was ready to leave the booth. He said he was ready to go downstairs and try to get a few sacks himself. He would have come out of retirement for, I think, the fourth quarter for this game and then gone right back into the booth. But, yeah, they were licking their chops, pinning their ears back, whatever phrase you want to use. And it didn't matter if it was a defensive tackle, a linebacker, a defensive back. They were going after that young guy.
They kept having the team meeting at the quarterback, man. That's what you always want to do, man. You want to have a team meeting at the quarterback.
Players
only.
I'm
going to tell you what. They always say it, man. When you hit the quarterback, the whole team feels it. And he felt it more than anything.
Man, I hope they got a nice tub for that guy.
Yeah, more book. I saw, and they showed the beginning, his whole family there, man. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's a tough way to get started, man, against a Dolphin defense like that, man. It's a tough way to start your career.
And good on the players, but also good in the coaching staff, because something that Seth came in a little bit fired up about was he wanted to get after that quarterback from the opening snap. And I thought they did that with pressure looks. They actually, Next Gen Stats posted a graphic, on the broadcast from Next Gen Stats that Miami blitzed him 70% of the passing plays in that first half. And that was the most by any team in a single half this entire season. Juice, I loved the way they changed the picture on him. Don't make it easy on him. Don't play some soft coverage that gives him the easy opportunities. There was a great play early in the game, 8-man coverage with eyes on the quarterback, and Jerome Baker closes it down. Or maybe it was Xavier Howard that got that sack. They throw the cat blitz with the cornerback, Byron Jones, off the edge. He never blitzes. That's a new look. Later on, you have Alvin Kamara kind of in a close, condensed set, close to the formation, and he has a possible option route there, and they bracket it and take him away. So I thought the game plan, too, was fantastic from the Dolphins coaching staff.
Yeah, when you look at him, who are you going to take away in this game? Kamara. You have to. You have to find a way. And he's more dangerous, I think, in the passing game than he is in the run game. So, yeah, you get an opportunity. You got your guys, X and Byron, you know, on some one-on-ones, but then you get a guy like Kamara, and you bracket him. We'll call INO, got somebody on the inside, somebody on the outside. Whatever you do, we've got it covered. And that's ideal. You know, you got a quarterback that's under a lot of pressure from the beginning of this game, then you got a, you know, running back that they're going to run the shorter routes with. You bracket that, then where does he go with the football? He gets sacked. That's what happened this game. So when you go with a defensive scheme like that, bringing some pressure, different looks, looks like guys are coming eight across. You know, some guys are bailing. Some guys are coming off the edge and vice versa. I mean, that's exactly what you do to a young quarterback. Smart quarterback. He went to Notre Dame, played some big games. But, hey, he ain't played against the Miami Dolphin defense.
Or any NFL defense, for that matter.
He played against his own, I'm sure.
Yeah, but even he wasn't playing against the starters. He didn't get any reps against the ones.
Yeah.
So look, that was an eye-opening experience, I'm sure, for him. He'll grow from that. He'll never see anything like that again in his life. And you know, but that's, I go back to what I said earlier. That's what you're supposed to do against a young guy who isn't prepared to handle that kind of heat. That's what you got to do.
Would you guys be upset with me if I told you I was disappointed about the 56-yard completion to Lil Jordan Humphrey? Because it would have barely been over 100 yards. With that play and the Kamara play, the 19-yard rush, they were under 100 yards without those two plays. I thought they both were a little bit, could have gone either way. So for some reason, that annoys me because it was so dominant by Miami. And it certainly shows up in the stats, too. We talked about 8 sacks. Book finishes the game 12 for 20, 135, 2 picks, and 8 sacks. And that first pick, how pumped were you guys on, what was it, the third defensive play of the game? A tip pass by Andrew Van Ginkel, who I thought did a fantastic job of knowing.
Again.
Third and two, I'm trying to run this pass rush game, but I see the quarterback get to his drop. I'm going to go, and he's separating the hands, which means the ball's coming out. So he gets separation from his man, Juice, and gets his hands up in the air, gets the tip, and there's Nick Needham to take it in. Talk about how that kind of set a tone for the course of that game.
Well, even more importantly, Travis, the fact that the offense went out there and went three and out.
Yep.
you know, and, you know, we got the ball first, went out there with three and out, and I said, well, this is just as good as us getting the ball first and scoring. It was huge. You know, defense comes in there, and they get a score right away. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better defensive start, and it kind of set the tone for the whole rest of the game and how the defense is going to play, man. But heck of a play, as usual. Look, man, we can sit here and talk about our defense, like, all night because of, you know, so many guys were had such an instrumental part and an instrumental role in what we're doing. And just that start right there, Van Ginkel getting his hands up, not getting there on something quick, getting his hands up, and we run under for a pick six. Then all the sacks when guys are gluing guys, you know, across the board, eight in the box, it looks like, and guys come from different angles, you know, and guys getting there. So I thought that start right there is the way you set the tone right away, especially when you're going into, you know, into New Orleans where it's so loud in there. It was loud for a while, but then it was loud because I heard a lot of Dolphin chatter. You know what I mean? Yeah. I heard the Duke chants. Mm-hmm. You know, we quiet a crowd that's usually incredibly loud, especially on Monday Night Football, and that's how you do it. You started by getting it done early with your defense. That'll quiet people down really fast.
Yeah, I thought you mentioned Needham driving on that pass. I thought he was in position to make a play regardless of the tip, and that was just kind of the whole focus of the night, Seth, and that's kind of been a focus of the whole season, getting your hand on the football. But, man, up front, these guys are deep. They come in waves. They put pressure on you.
Absolutely.
Against the running game, how pumped are you to watch that when I know you have a bit of affinity for defensive line play?
Yeah, well, certainly around the edge. But no, I mean, look, just put pressure on the quarterback. I've been talking to you about this since the offseason, or I don't even remember who the guest was, but he wanted to start changing the way that we play defense. This was a physical, dominant defense last year that forced turnovers, one of the top teams in the league forcing turnovers. Do what you do best. You know, how many times have we heard this year we're going to take what the defense gives us? How about you do what you do best and you dictate to the other team? And so defensively, I don't want to give them anything. You know, especially when you have these rookies that show up and start bringing heat like that, especially when you have two safeties that can bring heat like that, especially when you have corners that can cover. Get after the quarterback. This entire game is built around the ability of the quarterback to make plays, move an offense, lead a team. And if you can disrupt the quarterback, you disrupt the entire game plan of that team on both sides of the ball. And that's what they did today. And you have to do that when you're playing the fourth string quarterback. And, you know, regardless of how many games he won at Notre Dame, regardless of how bright his future may or may not be, you have to get after the quarterback.
And that's exactly what they did. I'm glad you mentioned the safeties talking about the D-line there. It's all three levels this pass rush comes from. Brandon Jones gets his fifth sack of the season. That's most in the NFL among all defensive backs. Javon Holland gets a half sack as well. We'll check on pressures and the Drive Time podcast. We'll have those numbers for you on the recap podcast. I want to come back and talk more about the offense, the mistakes, and all. Tua Tagovailoa bounces back again. But first,